is over.
Yay, 50% candy.
50% candy. Yeah, I don't really celebrate Valentine's Day, Becky and I. I don't know if it's corporate or not, but it's just, you know, it's like to pick one day to like the fact that you're in a relationship. But boy, do we like 50% candy day.
Yeah, I do like the days that come after it. That's actually, I mentioned this on Facebook before. The 50% off candy is the only reason I know the holiday already happened.
Yeah.
The regular priced candy is how I know that it's coming.
The great thing is 50% candy day comes three times a year. Mm-hmm. There's the pink and red, you know, the pink and red and white 50% candy. There's the bunny themed 50% candy holiday. And then there's the black and orange themed 50% yes. candy holiday. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. As usual, my name is Sam. And with me today is Mike. How you doing?
Hey.
And back for a while, Bob. How you doing, Bob?
Very good, thanks.
Awesome. Fantastic. So we have some really interesting stuff for this show. First and foremost, there was recently a humanist invocation at the Oak Harbor City Council, and joining us now is Robert Ray, president of Humanists of North Puget Sound and on the board of Humanists of Washington with me, who is a humanist officiant and the guy who gave the invocation. How are you doing today?
I'm the second other call.
Oops, sorry.
That's okay.
All right, what did I do?
Technology, what can you do?
Yeah. All right, Robert, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here now.
Wow, okay. That was a noob mistake right there. So
shame.
Yeah. So first and foremost, what is a humanist officiant in this scenario?
So a humanist officiant in this scenario allows me to work at the same level as a religious clergy member in this regard, which means they can't discriminate against me when it comes to things like invocations at meetings and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So how did the story at Oak Harbor get started?
Well, in June of 2013, there was this big to-do about prayer and at the beginning of the Oak Harbor meetings, which they've been having for a very long time.
Yeah.
And there was a resolution, which was Resolution 1306, which basically stated that they could have invocations, providing they did not name a particular deity. Which, if you look at the tapes, that has not been going on.
Right.
So Tom Smith and I talked about it and said, you know what, we need to just, you know, put our foot in the door and say, if you're going to have these, you better have one of these as well. So, and that's why I decided to step in.
So what was it that was happening beforehand? How egregious was the rule-breaking in this case, Robert?
Well, it was so egregious that one of the council members themselves would end every prayer with, in Jesus Christ, amen. So that's fairly egregious.
Yeah, sounds pretty legit to me.
Yeah.
And they would also invite basically any pastor they could find, including a Christian Science practitioner.
Wow, those are still around?
Yes. Apparently there's one on Whidbey Island somewhere.
Okay.
Wow, I thought they were just a newspaper now.
Yeah, it's a nice newspaper supporting a really tiny religion, that's last I heard.
So it was only Christians, no Hindus or Muslims?
Nope.
So what did you... Do you have the invocation that you gave?
Yes, I do.
Would you mind reading it for us?
Sure.
Okay.
Let me pull it up here.
No problem.
All right. I'll just go ahead and start it off then. Thank you, Mayor and Council members, for this opportunity to provide an inspirational start to your meeting. Normally, you would bow your head for an invocation in this chamber, but I'm going to ask that you raise your eyes and think about a few things today. When this body comes together to govern, they do so with the consent of the citizens of Oak Harbor. Oak Harbor is a very diverse community with many different views and opinions. My secular humanism, which is to say reason and science, lead me to believe that we, as humans, can meet the challenges of these differences and create a society with less dissension and leave a better, more equal culture for future generations. It is incumbent upon this council to make the best decisions for the community. In this regard, I ask you to use reason, wisdom, and empathy in your deliberations today, to take into account the implications your decisions will have now and in the future. We should all plant an acorn, even though we may not live to hear the wind rush through its leaves or the joyous laughter of children playing in the comfort of its shade. We plant the seeds for the benefit of future generations. In the words of Bertrand Russell, in order to do our part, one must care about a world one will not see. That was pretty much it.
Nice.
I really liked that, especially the imagery involved. It just seems like a lot of the invocations. One of my biggest problems, we've talked about this with legislatures, is that they all open up with a religious observance, and to me, that seems to be a violation of the Establishment Clause. It's not to the Supreme Court or to anybody else on Earth, apparently, but to me, it is. And it's nice to see that. And the verbiage that I get is pretty dead a lot of the time. It's just, you know, the same old, Yahweh beating that
repetitive.
We used to hear. So to have something that includes really striking images and, you know, usually you bow your head, but don't do that this time. I really like that. And I think it was a very good representation of humanism in this case.
What has the reaction been?
So far, very, very positive. I haven't had any negative reactions directly. I did notice at the council meeting that there were at least one council member that was not exactly happy. So, but I did notice the mayor nod a couple times.
Yeah.
About what I was saying, which was really nice.
I noticed a couple folks on the council trying to not bow their heads. Like,
yeah.
They'd start bowing their heads. Oh, wait, no. And then they'd say, no, wait, no, no, no.
Yeah, and I got to thank the folks of the Humanist and Freethinkers of Whidbey Island. Those two front rows, those were all humanists and freethinkers from Whidbey Island.
Oh, that's fantastic. So as a humanist officiant, you also do things like weddings and funerals and stuff like that, right?
Yes.
Okay. Have you done both of those yet? Or
I have done weddings.
Okay.
I haven't had the opportunity to do a funeral yet.
Mm.
I haven't exactly advertised that part, and no one that I know has died yet.
So believe it or not, we often get people saying I'm an atheist or I'm a humanist, and I don't want to have somebody who's religious preside over my wedding. So having the community know that you're out there is a good thing. So where would somebody find you online if they wanted to get your services as a officiant?
You can either go to my website, which is PugetSoundCelebrant.com.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can look me up on Facebook at Puget Sound Celebrant.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and congratulations on getting the chance to talk to the city council, and really good job on what you said. I really enjoyed it.
Let's hope there's more of the same.
Yeah, indeed.
Thanks. That means a lot. Thanks, guys.
No problem. Joining us now is Gene from Silver Springs, talking about, we talked about last week about a monument in Florida, an atheist monument that would go next to yet another Ten Commandments monument. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well. How are you doing, Sam?
Not too bad. Can you give us, for those who didn't listen last week, can you give us a little background on what this monument is and what it's appearing next to?
Okay, and we have three Ten Commandments monuments right now that are in the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
The one that went into Stark, beside which we got our first atheist monument placed, which is a bench.
Yeah.
Which you've probably seen pictures of, and Bronson, which is south and west of Stark, also has a Ten Commandments monument, which has been there since 2010. The one in Stark was put up by the Christian Men's Fellowship. The one in Bronson, it was put up by the Tri-County Pregnancy Center, which is a Christian group, in 2010. We have a Williston atheist group, which is Bronson and Williston are both in Levy County.
Mm-hmm.
So Williston atheist, through Ray Sparrow, and we are both organizers of the Williston Atheist. Even though I live in Silver Springs, we have a very red state down here in Florida, as you well know.
Yeah.
And we have several small throughout the different counties. And Ray filed a petition on the 13th of January, and I'm sure it was denied as of the afternoon of the 13th, as soon as they saw who it was from. They announced it on the 21st of January, and on the 4th of February, we went back for the hearing to be placed in what they call their forum.
Right.
Forum is supposed to be an exchange of free ideas and opinions, but apparently they don't have the same ideas. But it has the Ten Commandments monument on one side, and there's a flagpole, and there's a veterans monument. And we asked to have ours put on the other side, which put the veterans monument in between the two, which was denied for various reasons. They gave us never let us know. We knew it was going to be denied. I mean, it's what we expected.
Right.
Pretty much.
Have they given any reasons why they've denied it?
Oh, yeah. I've got a whole list of them right here. The first one reason being that we were not a quote-unquote registered organization within the state of Florida. We are an affiliate of American Atheists, but we are not a 501(c) in our own right.
Right.
So they said that, therefore, we did not have standing to be able to do so, which, of course, meant under their thing would be that the bond and all of that was not going to be paid in the insurance. Well, the American Atheists are the ones that put these in, so they would have covered that.
Right.
So that was, and of course, I told them that. Didn't make any difference. They didn't like our inscriptions on the monument.
Yeah, I heard something about it being partial quotes, and they had some rule about that.
Oh, yes. They wanted the total document from which each quote was taken.
So,
and my question to the commissioner was, do you find that the Ten Commandments are the full document from which those 10 particular items were taken? Of course, I got no answer to that.
Of course.
And they have given us 30 days to appeal this, so we're working on that. We're trying to decide what we will do about an appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, if that, too, is refused due to bigotry or something of that nature, we will then decide what our next step is we will fight them.
Good. I hope you're talking to, clearly you're talking to American Atheists, so you're getting help from the national organizations?
It's been reported to them, yes.
Okay.
If
people want to help out or get more information, where should I send them?
Well, the only thing we're doing right now is it's just a matter of time, because the one in Stark from the first beginning to inception was probably from about a year.
Right.
Williston Atheists, they can go on. We have a Facebook page, Williston Atheists. We also have one. I have another group here in Ocala, Florida, which is, we live in Silver Springs, but it's right across county line.
Yeah.
All Marion County, Ocala Atheists. And they can see either one on the Facebook page. Their open Facebook pages, Williston Atheists and Ocala Atheists. And they're...
Okay. Well, Gene, thank you very much. If you could keep us posted on what's going on with this monument. These are really important stories, and it just shows the religious privilege that goes on here in the United States. So we do need to keep on top of these. So if you could,
we didn't ask them to move their monument. We just asked for parity. We just asked for the equality.
Exactly.
To be able to place ours alongside. There's a third one which is up in Dixie County, which is right up the road from Levy County.
Mm.
Unfortunately, that one still stands right on the steps of the courthouse because
right.
The plaintiff who was supposed to move into town from out of state did not. And now they don't have a plaintiff to have a standing in the county. And none of the people in the county, if you're familiar with that area, this is the quote-unquote real Florida.
Yes.
Which is, I'm a native Floridian, so I'm very familiar with it. And it's a KKK country, backwoods, Levy County, where the Bronson Memorial is, home of the Rosewood Massacre in 1923.
Yeah.
Which is...
Well, Gene, do keep us posted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sam.
Thanks.
Best of luck.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
So, yeah, I remember from the earliest days of Ask an Atheist, the farther north you go in Florida, the farther south you go. I remember that quote. So we have another announcement. Next week, we'll be joined by secular musician Roy Zimmerman, and he'll be performing for us at the Post Show. We'll be meeting at the North Pacific Coffee Company at 5 p.m. There's no cover, but we encourage you to bring $10 or what you can to support Ray on his tour. So join us for an evening of music, drinks, camaraderie, and coffee at PCC next week. At 5 p.m. should be a good time, and he will be here in the studio next week as well. So we have some fun news today. I'll do a very very quick story here. Charter School Polls Creationist Workbook. Responsive Education Solutions, a Texas-based charter school company operating in several states, has pulled its biology workbooks after the Arkansas Department of Education received complaints that the courses unconstitutionally taught creationism as science. A letter from Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, along with an investigative piece in Slate magazine by science and education activist Zach Coplin, who we interviewed last year, charged that the workbooks framed evolution as an unproven theory which has reached the level of dogma.
Hmm.
There is no word whether Responsive Ed plans to alter its history or values education curricula, both which favor Christian cultural bias and outright historical falsehoods.
Or the name of their organization. I'd think that would be the first thing I would change.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's not a question of Responsive Education Solutions. And again, this is the thing. When you have a charter school system, you have to be very careful who you give those charters to.
Yeah.
Don't just look at the name. Don't just look at the mission statement. Dig deeper. Because a lot of these people that are clamoring to get that public school money are people you don't want to give it to.
Right.
People who wanted basically just pound your kids with creationist dogma.
Germ theory is another unproven theory,
yeah,
as are all scientific theories.
Yeah.
So the idea that evolution is unproven, well, yeah, that's not the point. It's
proof is a mathematical concept.
Well-established science. It's a good point in math and logic only.
It's a lot more proven than any of the stuff that they're going to present. I mean, creationism doesn't even have the hypothesis classification because it's untestable.
Now, Mike, were you there?
Oh, are we?
Neither
back to
were sorry, they. Sorry. That's the whole point.
Ah, oh, man.
Yeah.
We sort of raged out about that last week. But here's the thing. In that quote, they talk, you know, they say theory, which is one of their watchwords, you know, with their different English, their English part two, Electric Boogaloo. But they use the word dogma, and they use it, as you mentioned, in a pejorative sense. Dogma really something that organizations like this really want to talk about, though?
Well, this is something I've noticed quite a bit, which is the same mentality where they try to say, well, atheism is just another religion, where it seems like they want to pull us down into the muck without realizing that they're saying that they're in the muck. And I don't think they really quite grasp the... I mean, introspectively, you look at those sentences and you're saying, yeah, well, you're just as bad as us. And you're just still saying you're bad, right? Well, you're using dogma as a pejorative word. You're still not getting that you're directing that, of course, at yourself, because, of course, you're making supernatural claims and saying nothing can ever change my mind. That's the definition of dogma. It's not going to change. I mean, here's the difference here between creationism and science. Science, one, as Bill Nye recently said, can use to make predictions.
Right.
It can also back its claims up with evidence that you can go and check that work. Somebody can give you lecture after lecture building the foundations of how we know the things we know. With creationism, it just says, we just know this, I believe it, end of question, we're done here. I don't want us have you looking at other points of view.
And they're proud of the fact that there's nothing other than this is what it says and I believe it, Greg?
I think very often that is the case. They ask for evidence from science, which is valid. They'll point to errors within science, Piltdown Man, that sort of thing, found by science, by the way, not by creationism.
Right.
And yet, if that's the game you want to play, great. Okay, where's your science? Where's your evidence? Love to see it.
I just think I can't wait to have this particular book in my library now that it's going out of print, which means it'll be slightly easier for me to get my hands on a copy of it. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to go into a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Chris Johnson about his book, A Better Life, Joy and Meaning in a World Without God.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful it cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul, save the universe!
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Root.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Join the Ask an Atheist after party at Doyle's Public House. The Ask an Atheist crew will be there at 5 for good beers, food, and you're invited. You'll find a dozen beers on tap, including Stella, Guinness, Smithwick's Irish Ale, Twisted Thistle IPA, and Fuller's London Porter, as well as dozens of domestic and imported beers and bottles. Join us for Good Atheist Conversation and meet the crew today at 5 at Doyle's, 208 St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And joining us now is Chris Johnson. He's a freelance photographer who took a two-year journey around three continents to interview and photograph formerly religious individuals whose lives are now featured in a book called A Better Life, Joy and Meaning in a World Without God. How are you doing today?
Good. Nice to be here.
So tell us about this book. What gave you the idea to travel the world and take pictures of atheists?
Well, I have always found the issue of religion very interesting. Mm-hmm. I minored in religious studies in college, and so it was always something kind of on my mind. And mm-hmm. I was on a road trip with my brother through the Southwest United States, and just seeing all the beauty around me, and knowing that there's so many people in the country who think that without a God, that is meaningless.
Yeah.
And so it inspired me to do this book.
You know, that's such a big thing for me. I've been thinking, doing a bit of writing about it lately. I got some blog posts in mind, but the idea that because I don't have a God in my life, that somehow the universe is static and boring and completely understandable, and I just don't understand that.
Yeah, how can you live with the universe just being cool and interesting and pretty?
Yeah. There's so much we don't know, and there's so much of the universe we've never seen. It just the scientific understanding to the universe seems way more grand and mysterious to me than a cumulonimbus following the Jews throughout a desert for 40 years.
I mean, that sounds like a Lakatu.
Yeah, Lakatu. Yeah, indeed.
I also think, you know, if this is the only life you have, if this is it, if there is no afterlife, right, which, as far as we know, that's what it is, that makes our time together even that more special and meaningful.
Sure. And so you are a photographer, and so you minored in religious studies. And is that why you chose to take photographs of atheist folks? Or?
Well, I minored in religious studies because I found the topic interesting. I mm-hmm. enjoyed learning about what other people believed.
Right.
And I've always been an atheist myself, but I always found the topic interesting. And so to meet people who don't necessarily conform to the stereotype of what an atheist is. And that's the other thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, we are a diverse group of people.
Yeah.
And we're not just kind of a singular type. People think of an old white college professor as being the typical atheist. But we're young, we're old, we're black, we're white, we're gay, we're straight. We're all different kinds of people from all over the world, and I wanted to showcase that.
So what kind of people did you interview in the book, or photograph in the book?
They're familiar faces for people who are familiar with the people in the atheist world. You know, Richard Dawkins and Dan Dennett, Penn and Teller, Darren Brown, mm-hmm. people like that. Also ordinary people. There's an airline pilot. There's a psychologist. All different kinds of people, activists. I really wanted to, as I said, show the diversity of the people within the movement.
And that's what I really like about this book is, you know, we tend to talk a lot about the major, you know, the big names in the atheism community. But the atheism community is deeper than people realize. There's just a lot of normal people. And I think just showing how awesome the community is and the kind of people that we've got, I think that's really important work. That said, was there anybody you were particularly nervous about working with over the course of the book?
Oh, multiple people. when you've read someone's works or seen them lecture, and you're very impressed by them, it is a little intimidating going to, going to photograph them and meet them in person. But what an opportunity. You know, people like Richard Dawkins and Penn and Teller, I was a bit nervous about going to see them, but they were very nice and we had a good time.
That's good. So you're originally from the Seattle area.
Yeah, I grew up in Seattle.
Okay, but you live in New York now?
I live in New York now.
Okay, so one of the things we've noticed is, or that I've noticed, is there's sort of a difference, you know, the cultural differences between the coasts is a big thing. And
you're being nice, but the word you're looking for is passive-aggressive.
Passive-aggressive. No, you know, passive-aggressive is everywhere. I'm from the Midwest. Well, we know passive-aggressive.
But we have the most, you know, weaponized strain of it.
Yeah, the Seattle freeze is a thing. I should know, having been a victim of it. But is there a major difference between the sort of the culture of atheism between sort of New York and Seattle?
That's a really good question. I can't think of one really. Mm. No, I think, I mean, that's one of the themes of the book, I think, is that for all our differences,
right,
we all are very similar. Like, you know, we all, the things we love, the things we cherish, the things we strive for, the things we want in our lives, I think are all similar depending, no matter where you are.
I think that would follow. I mean, with the modern atheism movement and the rationality and science of it, it does sort of suggest a certain, you know, that you would like certain things. Like, I imagine a lot of people in the atheism community can't wait for Cosmos to hit the air, you know, stuff like that. And I think that's also really cool that you're showing the differences, but are you finding a common thread, throughout these photos as you take them?
Absolutely. Relationships, family, friends, community. That's the other thing that's really important, I think, is people find that if they leave a religion, oftentimes they leave the community.
Right.
Because, you know, that's where you make your friends. That's where you have the bake sales and the gatherings, and where you go every week to spend time with other people. And so for many atheists, they find that, you know, once they leave that, they don't have a sense of community anymore. And I think we're seeing with things like Sunday Assembly and different organizations stepping up to provide that community space, we're seeing a lot more people reaching out and coming together, which I think is important for us.
What do you think the next step in building that community is for us in the free thought world?
I think just recognizing that coming together and spending time together in an organized structure isn't necessarily bad.
Right.
Just because religion has used it, it's more of a human trait than a religious one. And, you know, I've gone to the Sunday Assembly in New York and different organizations around, and it's atheist conferences run by American atheists, things like that. And those are fantastic. And I think we need more of that. We need more community building. And I think the internet as well is helping with that.
In all the times you've spent photographing people, has there been anything that's truly surprised you? Something that there's things we sort of expect to see when we walk into it, but is there anything that really took you by surprise?
I was surprised at how thrilled people were to be a part of this. I mean, for something that just came out of my head, something that I wanted to do, to get people who, you know, like AC Grayling, who, you know, squeezed me into his schedule because he really, really wanted to do this, or Penn and Teller, who squeezed me in to be a part of it. You know, it really means a lot when people want to make time and want to be a part of something that is important to you, and because they agree with the message and they want to show that, you know, we're all not, you know, we don't have horns and we're not going to eat babies and things like that. So
we may joke about it, but we don't actually.
But it's really amazing how deep-seated and widespread a lot of those stereotypes are, and why books like this are important, to just see that all of these things that I believe, like you said, coming together in an organized fashion and just being community, have been co-opted by religion. And then you realizing that this is a human thing that is bigger than any one faith, any one God, any one belief system. I think that's potentially what the real power of a book like this is seeing us not as that grumpy guy on TV, but as people. And I think that's a really powerful statement.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you did this as a Kickstarter thing, correct?
Yeah.
I've been watching Kickstarter with some interest. What does Kickstarter look like? I've given money to Kickstarter. A lot of us have given money to Kickstarter projects. What does Kickstarter look like, for someone who's putting together an atheist project? Did you get a lot of feedback? How was raising the money for it through Kickstarter?
Well, Kickstarter really was the missing piece of the puzzle for me, because I'm not a known photographer. I don't have I don't have a publisher behind me. So I didn't know how I was going to do this project. And it wasn't until I found Kickstarter that I realized, okay, here's a platform that I can get funding for this.
Right.
And Kickstarter is fantastic because it's all about the idea. If you have a good idea, you just put it out there and people will support it. And you have to work to get people to find out about the project.
But, yeah.
Kickstarter was great. They're very hands off in terms of once you create the project, they kind of let you do your thing. I don't get constant emails from them asking how things are going.
Oh, really? That's good.
It's nice. I mean, you really are treated like an adult. It's great to be able to, have a platform to raise this money. And as I said, when we raised the money for this, it was the second highest grossing publishing project Kickstarter had ever done.
Wow.
That's great.
That's an achievement.
So in the atheism community, especially online, we are very much in a way, I mean, Ask an Atheist is no exception. We're very much a DIY community. It's like we didn't find an atheist radio show or so we set out to make one. I mean, YouTube is very popular, but to be honest, the usual transmission of message in the atheism community is words and sounds and stuff like that. What kind of message do you think a photo book like this transmits that we're missing, say, in a radio show?
I think smiling faces can say a lot.
Yeah, we're just unrepentant monsters.
Well, so, the thing is, you're both smiling here in front of you, and nobody at home can see that. And I think that does a lot. When people look at a book like this and they see all these smiling faces on the cover, they see these people having fun, I think that really, puts a little seed in your mind about what it is that you're seeing.
That's really, because, I mean, the whole angry atheist thing, that's such a common trope that you hear it so often. And I've always kind of wondered how to counter that, especially when, well, I'm kind of an angry guy sometimes, but.
And I think there's a place for that. I mean, there are definite reasons to be angry right now as an atheist, as a member of the community. There are things to be upset about. There are things we need to change. And I think that's very important. On the other hand, I think that one of the things this book tries to address is the fact that we need to also talk about what we do believe.
Right.
We talk so much about what we don't believe. And I think it's really important for us to show, we might not believe in a God, but we believe in love. We believe in family. We believe in relationships and friends and being close to one another. So I think that helps change the image of what people think of when they think of atheists.
So we've talked about sort of the function of the book, but let's talk about the form. It's we have a copy here in the studio. It is a big book. I would measure it at about 4 of Pandas and People.
Yes.
I think that's about where I would put it. This is a sizable book.
And I'm a big fan of hardcovers without dust jackets.
Yeah.
They're just gorgeous. They hold up really well. It's a really, really pretty book.
So when somebody opens up this book, what would they expect to find? What do they see?
Hopefully, stories about other people's lives that are inspiring to them. People who are doing things that they love. People who are with people they love. People who are part of community, despite not believing in a God. And I think that's important.
Very good. So you're a filmmaker and a photographer. What's, now that this is out and you're going around talking about it now, what's your next job? Next step?
Well, I'm looking into, doing a film version of the book.
Oh, neat.
I taped all the interviews I did, so I have a lot of footage to work with. I've been putting clips online, so I want to put together something more substantial for that. But right now, it's just promoting the book and trying to get it out there and get people to notice it.
Were there any stories from the making of the book that kind of took you by surprise?
One of the stories I love to tell is, meeting James Randi.
Oh, yeah.
Who is absolutely fantastic. And I took a cab to his house in Florida and we spent a couple of hours together and it was wonderful and took photos and chatted. And, I called the cab to come pick me up and they said it would be 45 minutes. And I felt a little nervous about that. And he said, oh, no, don't worry about that. And he sat down with his big scrapbook and we just sat down for about 45 minutes and he would just go through the scrapbook of his life, showing me clippings and pictures and pointing out people in the photos. And it was such an incredible experience to have with someone like that.
Back in the early days of Ask an Atheist, we did a list of people we'd like to interview. And so we had this list, and at the bottom, it was Shoot for the Moon, James Randi. And we actually got to interview him. And and that's the weird thing is you expect him because he does those shows and he's very,
he's been on the Tonight Show.
He's been on the Tonight Show. He was, he was the mad dentist for Alice Cooper. I expected him to be kind of what he looks like on the British TV show, very erudite and very focused. And he is those things, but he was incredibly nice. And
he's very funny, too.
And really funny. So if they would like to get the book, where would people go?
Well, people can go to theatheistbook.com.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, for the next week, I actually have a special offer. If people enter the discount code KLAY, they get 10% off.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much. Look forward to why don't you talk to us again when your movie's ready.
Sounds good. Thank you.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back, we're going to catch up on some news and emails.
Da-da-da-da.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. We invite a rotating panel of our friends over to talk about science fiction, comic books, movies, horror, animation, professional wrestling, video games, and George freaking Lucas.
It's a warts and all look at popular geek culture, where we tip sacred cows and use profanity while arguing about children's entertainment.
Think of it as the McLaughlin Group for nerds.
Find us online at Radio Versus the Martians.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And definitely check out that coffee book. No dust jacket type stuff, which I love.
Oh, they look great.
But the photographs are beautiful, and it really shows a slice of the atheism community. And it says things that, as much as I love radio, that we really can't do, being an audio-only medium. So
much of atheism these days is nonfiction, which is fine. Just, hear arguments, hear the issues, politics, that sort of thing. But showing people, actual atheists as people, that's a nice facet that hasn't been explored.
That's what it comes down to. So if you do like visual interaction, you can join us on March 6th. That's a Thursday. We'll be recording an episode of Ask an Atheist at Tacoma Community College. If you're in the area, we encourage you to join us for the show and hopefully some drinks and conversation afterwards. This is going to be brought to us by the TCC Science and Inquiry Club. So looking forward to that. We did one last year and it was a lot of fun. I do love doing the live episodes. I would also like to thank Charles from Seattle, Washington, Peggy from Kent, Washington, Candace from Bremerton, Washington, and Ronnie from Denmark for meeting Peggy from Kent's challenge to keep the lights on here at Ask an Atheist. Every dollar you give to us goes to keeping the show going. You can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button, and take you right to our PayPal page. So we have, boy, I have been waiting for this story. I have to admit, oh, this is good. Snake Salvation is a poorly named show. Jamie Coots, the subject of reality series Snake Salvation, has died of a snake bite. Let that sink in. Coots was the pastor of a church of snake handlers, a small group of Pentecostal Christians who believe that God will protect them from the poisonous bites and stings of animals like snakes and scorpions. Police found Coots with a snake bite on his right hand. EMS responders explained to him the dangers of refusing medical care for a bite, but Coots was adamant and refused to have the wound treated. Police and EMS returned an hour later to find Coots dead.
Well, what a surprise. Yeah.
I don't want to get too much joy out of...
I'm not a detective, but I'm going to think the snake did it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the snake did it.
And I think this is probably something he could have prevented by not handling snakes.
Or yeah. As a plan B, doing what the EMT people told him to do.
Yeah, you were bit by a snake. Isn't the bet already off once you're bitten? Yeah. Isn't that how
that works? And it starts to swell, and it's clearly you're going downhill. Yeah, I think God's not stepping in.
The bet's God has decided that today you're not gonna.
When your arm goes numb and swelling up and turning purple, I think that's about the time you realize, hey, maybe the faith thing didn't work this time. Let's see what the doctor has to say.
So
then there's that whole thing about the long ending of Mark.
Yeah, we were talking about that. As our resident Bible weirdness expert, where the heck does this come from?
It's one of those things like so many nice quotations that are actually in Shakespeare, not the Bible.
Yeah.
It's not really in the Bible. There is the long ending of Mark. This is the King James Version. It's an extra 8 verses or so that says God will protect you from snakes. God will protect you from poison, that sort of thing. So it actually does say it, not exactly in the Bible. The best copies do not have that section.
So there's it's Mark, you said.
Mark, right.
Yeah. So there's the Dead Sea Scrolls, these papyrus or whatever they wrote on with in Greek, and it's all written. And then at the end, there's scribbled in crayon from somebody in the UK. Oh, by the way, your poison can't hurt you.
Well, what the original version of Mark ended where the angels told the women, you got to go tell everybody, and the women didn't because they were afraid. The end. That's the original ending of Mark, as best as we can tell.
Right.
And, I mean, not surprisingly, people later said, yeah, this is crazy. I mean, how did the religion start? So we got to have something.
Right.
So they went and told everybody, and then Jesus came back and gave them all kinds of great wisdom, just like the other gospels. But that is not original.
Where do they think it was? Was it injected in the King James Version?
Or? No. It was injected in a later copy. So you can find old copies written on papyrus from the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, whatever it is, centuries.
Yeah.
With both versions, which one's oldest? Which one's best? Aha! The ones that are shorter. The ones that do not have the snake part.
I found it really interesting. You guys had mentioned before the show that Jamie Coots' father had died from a snake bite as well.
I'm not sure if it was that guy, but there was one case. I remember it was. I don't know if he was on a reality show or whatever. This young pastor, snake handler,
right?
He gets bit by a snake, and the irony: his father already died from this thing. And you think he'd realize? Well, sometimes God just doesn't step in. Maybe I should just get the medicine.
Yeah.
But he said, no, my faith is strong. What good is this? I mean, you're proving that the faith doesn't work.
Your faith is clearly strong. Your biology, on the other hand, is completely a different thing in the face of toxins. Now, this goes back into, I don't want to say I'm glad he's dead. You know what I mean?
No.
This is not, he's not Harold Camping. He had a reality TV show. He's one, a small church, whatever. It's reality television. But There's a little bit of a dark humor thing going on. You have to admit, when you're somebody like me and you read that somebody who makes people endanger themselves for the cause of God is bitten by a snake and it dies by the very thing that he endangers other people with.
You might almost look for a silver lining where his followers would say, let's just sort of step back from the edge here.
But that
it ain't going to happen.
Never happened.
It would have happened by now.
Yeah.
There's something called the Great Disappointment of 1844.
Right.
Yeah.
The Millerites, and they sell all their stuff. I think it's October 22nd. They have the exact day. They all gather at this one place, and the next day dawns, and everybody's still here, and they're looking around. And you think everyone to a man would say, you know, would leave poorer but wiser.
Yeah.
Yeah, that you think the failure for the world not to end over and over and over and over again would be a good reason to go, hey, you know what, maybe we shouldn't make predictions like this.
It's always those moments that I'm most curious about in these mass organizations, like in like the Millerites meeting in the field waiting for God to take them up.
They just doubled down.
What did it look like? But they doubled down and they came back later. But what did it look like in the first hours of the next morning when everybody got up and they just, it's sort of like the quest, a similar question I asked is, what were people doing in the first half hour at the end of Woodstock when they were all hungover and just like, whoa, where do we go? What side of the planet are we on? What did the Millerites do when they got up in the morning? Did they just make their hardtack and cheese and go, well, that stunk?
Well, I would imagine, and I wasn't there, Ken Ham, but I would say that probably initially there's a lot of confusion, a lot of tears, a lot of despair.
Yeah.
And then slowly desperation to try to explain what happened, because you've devoted yourself to something like this and you've probably burned a lot of personal professional bridges to this thing.
Right.
You believed it so purely.
Well, that's exactly what happened with Harold Camping.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You've put so much into this that you're going to look for anything, any lifeboat that you can grab onto and say, that's what happened. That's what happened. This is still good. Maybe we just didn't carry it too. And I think what's going to happen with something like this is they're going to try to find an excuse for him not to die. And again, it's the thing with faith. Blame the victim. Your faith just wasn't strong enough to protect you.
And you can just admit that you have been a knucklehead and have made the most hilariously bad decision ever, or do exactly what you're saying, which I think is what makes it make sense. Let's say that God did come back, but just not in a physical way. Let's say that.
Well, I think they should do like a fourth Hangover movie, but have it be the Millerites. The Millerites Hangover, where they all wake up the next day, the party, they're waiting for God to come. They wake up the next day and they're all stumbling around going, what did we do last night? Trying to figure out what churches they got mad at and who they flung dung at, because they're, you know, it's religion and that's what Martin Luther did. So it's got to be good for everybody.
At least they didn't drink poison.
That's true.
Some of the movements that involve these sort of great predictions and this time scale and this new age is coming, usually the transition from this age to the next one involves drinking poison of some kind, like the Hale-Bopp Comet folks at the Heaven's Gate cult.
Right.
Who thought they could board a UFO following the Hale-Bopp Comet by drinking poison.
Well,
so, I mean, thankfully these people who were not bitten by this snake did survive this and have that opportunity to go, you know what? Let's let this little bit of doubt grow and just go, you know what? Maybe there is something that makes this snake handling thing dangerous and silly.
Well, if you like drinking poison, like I do, join us after the show at Doyle's, 5 p.m., usual time, usual place. Should be fun. Our guest will be joining us. We can talk about the book, take a look at the book. So this next news story, a little bit of contention here in the Ask an Atheist ranks about what it actually means. 26% of Americans think that the sun revolves around the earth. In a survey of over 2,000 people by the National Science Foundation, more than one quarter of Americans believe that the earth is the center of the solar system, not the sun. In the same survey, only 39% answered correctly that the universe began with a huge explosion, and only 48% said human beings, as we know them today, developed from an earlier species of animals. Just over half understood that antibiotics were ineffective against viruses.
Yeah.
So, all of that, I believe, the stuff about evolution, the stuff about, the
antibiotics.
Antibiotics, I totally get that.
Okay.
The 26% about believe in geocentrism.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt.
Okay, I know we've had this sort of disagreement.
Yeah.
The argument that I would make is, you guys are familiar with Sherry Shepherd. She's the dumbest person on the TV show The View.
Mm-hmm.
And she was asked, I don't even know how this came up, I've only seen the clip, and this is where the clip begins, whether she thought the world was round or flat. And she says, well, I just don't know. I don't know. And Whoopi Goldberg, who's trying not to swallow her tongue and is trying to be friendly and not mean or laugh, says, well, what do you think, though?
Right.
Well, I just don't know. I just don't know. I've been too busy feeding my kids. And this is somebody who has access, obviously, to a lot more free time than most Americans. And I'd say that the Sherry Shepherd answer, rather than somebody being engulfed in a dogma that says this is a geocentric universe,
right,
is probably where that 26 comes from. I have no hard time believing that it's 26. I despair at it being 26%. But I think that a lot of them are simply people who just don't think about it and yeah, I guess that's what it looks like from where I stand, and I'm just not curious enough to look for the answer.
I doubt a lot, specifically about the sun going around the Earth, because the whole idea of Copernicus and geocentrism versus heliocentrism is part of modern culture. You know, people say, like the Earth going around the sun, as if it were something obvious. It's a meme.
It's moved beyond science to actually part of everyday culture.
Yeah, it's part of everyday culture. And if the lady from The View, Sherry Shepherd?
Yes.
Yeah, if 26%, if that was really the number, there would be six Sherry Shepherds that we could talk about. There would be a number of these people speaking out on this or just offhandedly not getting it. And we don't see that quite as much.
I think we do.
I don't. And this is the other thing, is these are usually phone interviews. Sometimes they're in malls or in shopping areas, major commercial sectors where there's a lot of people, so you have access to a good sample size. I think it's either one of two things, and I'm not seeing a lot of studies. Either people mishear the question, or they're just in busy. Which way does it happen? The Earth around the sun, or the sun around the Earth? The second one, because I have no time. Or I think there's a small population of people, and ask me why I know that, who will sometimes give weird answers to people who take surveys because they don't like the fact that they're being bothered during dinner time.
I think it's more likely to be the former rather than the latter. I think it's more likely that people mishear something than that. And I will say that, of course, with any survey, there's going to be variation because, again, this is 2,000 people. It's not 50 million.
Right.
So, obviously, and I can say this as somebody who, in a past dead-end job that I absolutely hated, worked as a market research survey giver for a market research company where I would call people, and I know how scrupulous these companies are about collecting things from a survey sample size that actually does reflect the population. And I know that, we need this amount of people who are men, this amount of people who are women, and just cutting it off. And I know what it's like to be.
But that says nothing about the actual construction of the survey, which is more, I'm less interested with the demographics of the people taking the survey here than I would be with the actual construction of the survey. I have a little bit of a background with getting statistics together, and people who write these surveys, sometimes they do weird, they don't write them right. You know, the English, it needs to be very clear, and sometimes they wrap it around and they warp it because they're used to writing for a university level rather than for like the sixth grade journalism level.
Oh, and I get that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take some amount in that. I'm not going to say that the number of people who believe this is exactly 26%.
Right.
And obviously there's going to be a give or take based on that number. What I'm saying is that I don't have a hard time believing that it's 26%, given things that U.S. congressmen say on a regular basis about science, and knowing that that person will say that and stay in office for like another 10 years. There are people who
they're not staying in office because their views on science. They're staying in office because of their other ideological alignments.
Well, I'm saying that those things are intertwined, that they don't care about science because of their ideology.
But they are educated. And they don't. They'll challenge global warming. They'll challenge evolution. For most people, the Earth going around the sun is not a challenge to their religion anymore. It was in the 16th century. It's not now.
But the general incuriosity that they have about scientific questions and basic astronomy,
right,
I think comes from that sort of idea that God made this, that's all I need to know.
My entire point, though, is that this isn't science. This has moved into culture. Now, so I guess what we're saying is you're saying more ignorance versus malice.
Yes.
And I'm saying more malice versus ignorance. Bob, break the tie for us.
I'm wondering, if you look at these 26%, if you did an analysis of these guys, what would they say? I mean, it seems like this raises a question more than gives an answer.
That's part of the problem is these are supposed to be surveys where you have no information about the person, so follow-up questions are difficult to do.
Right.
Well, I can say that, again, having been somebody who's done this and paid to do this, you ask a lot of quota questions at the end to make sure that you're not over-representing your group.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have another one. Oh, boy. Kiwi Prime Minister is not a reptile.
What a relief.
Yeah. Last month, Auckland, New Zealand man Shane Warbrook put in an Official Information Act request to Prime Minister John Key's office. asking for any evidence to disprove the theory that Mr. John Key is in fact a David Icke-style shape-shifting reptilian alien ushering humanity towards enslavement.
That's a quote.
That is a direct quote, isn't it? Yeah, okay. Key responded with a smile. To the best of my knowledge, no. Having been asked that question directly, I've taken the unusual step of not only seeing a doctor but a vet, and both have confirmed that I'm not a reptile, so I'm certainly not a reptile. I've never been in a spaceship, never been in outer space, and my tongue's not overly long either.
So does this say something about Gene Simmons?
Oh, is Gene Simmons a reptile?
A reptile. He could be.
Is it reptile or reptoid?
Reptoid, reptilian. I think it depends. Maybe one of those is a pejorative, sir, yeah, that the reptiles might find really offensive. Like, oh, yeah, I'm not a reptoid, sir. I am a reptilian American.
I take offense. Actually, I'm just curious. Sometimes people will cling to weird religious documents and say this proves reptiles. And I've noticed a lot of people who believe in the David Icke-style crazy lizard man stuff tend to be fairly religious. Do you know if there's anything in the Bible that they use to support that?
I've not seen a biblical connection. Yeah,
yeah.
The serpent. There's obviously a tempting serpent character. And what a lot of these conspiracy people do, I don't say they're necessarily
a shapeshifter.
They're not necessarily religious in the, well, if it's Satan, Satan's a shapeshifter.
He did lose his legs, so
fair point.
Generally speaking, I don't see religious people in the traditional sense. They're religious right. In the sense that they're believing all these things on faith, but I see a lot of people who are desperate to try to do what the Ancient Aliens guy do, is just take all this mythology, say it's all really true, except it was sci-fi, not fantasy. And I just see that happening here.
I wouldn't mind following up somebody in New Zealand following up and doing sort of a Principia Discordia type thing and asking the Prime Minister to prove that he's not a cabbage or something. Like, do we have to stop at reptoids? Can't we just, okay, prove that you're not a 1974 Ford Impala. That's not a Ford, never mind.
But the thing is, none of these people who believe this stuff are going to be convinced by he's like, well, the doctor and the veterinarian are obviously reptoids too.
They're in on the scheme.
Yeah,
yeah.
This is sort of a when did you stop hitting your wife kind of thing. Anything yeah. you say is just they're just going to use for evidence
of that, a cover up.
Yeah, of a cover up. I mean, I listen.
A cover up would use. What it would sound like.
Yeah, there is an 8-hour YouTube video of David Icke, and I watched it, and my brain melted. And that's all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam Holby, with Mike Gillis, Bob Seidensticker, and Chris Johnson, and Robert Ray. You can go to askanatheist.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 206-420-0997. We're going to be at Doyle's in an hour. Going to have a musician in the studio next week. See you then.